Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strohlig right here on LA Talk Radio.
You are almost, except for in for Paul Strohlig is Andrew David James.
Finally, I think we can all be glad about that. As long as Paul's not here, we have a chance. What do you guys think?
I'm on board.
I think Paul would disagree, and I know I do.
Well, so. Paul is in a very cold, windy city today. So.
That's right.
And has been since you have been with us.
That's the only way I can get any work is when Paul's out of town. So.
Oh, really?
That's right.
He's always in touch with you when he's out of town?
Whenever he's out of town, I get all his work, so it's a nice thing for me.
Oh, very nice. Very nice. Well, before we get into that, we'd like to thank our sponsors, ladies and gentlemen. Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to our live arts calendar.
Are we ever? And they're wonderful people down there. Mike Napoli and his crew with Performing Arts Live. It's, as you said, one of the go-to sites for, you know, all things that are arts, live arts here in Southern California. Drew, may I call you Drew?
Absolutely.
Yeah? All right. I didn't know whether you were sensitive to that or I had to call you Andrew or Mr. James.
I prefer Captain Fantastic. Oh, nobody tends to call me that anymore. Right. It's very strange.
All right, Captain. As you know, we have got another great show today, and they're both wonderful actors, singers, and stars of Southland Theater, TV, and film. We have the always effervescent Scott Dreyer, who is here to talk about his new album, The Doris Day Project.
And the dashing leading man, Robert Stanley. Dashing, did you hear me? Dashing.
I heard it.
Well done. He's also here, and he's on the boards again in a new project, Jane Martin's play called Jack and Jill, directed by Jack Heller, getting ready to open at the beautiful Santa Monica Playhouse in, strangely enough, Santa Monica,
yes,
California.
Yes, yeah. What are the odds of that?
Coincidence, really. We'll be talking with Robert and Scott in just a few minutes. But before we do, Michael, how was your week?
Yeah, you know what? It was pretty good coming off of Thanksgiving. Had a nice dinner with friends at a beautiful hotel here. And earlier in the day, we all got together and saw this phenomenal film, which I'm going to plug right now, Spotlight. Did you see it?
Oh, I saw it.
Yeah?
I saw it.
Wonderful. Yeah, did you see it?
Yeah, really
amazing.
Great.
Amazing. Have you seen it yet, Drew?
I have not, no.
Michael Keaton and
heard about it, of course.
Just a wonderful story, a true story based on the Catholic Archdiocese in Boston and what went on there in 1976 that the Boston Globe kind of exposed. Only, though, after letting many years go by of not touching it because of the power of the Catholic Church. So,
anybody going to mention that pun, not touching it? Nobody's going to mention any puns. I'll tell you the truth. Michael Keaton is on a roll right now, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's hitting on all cylinders. That's
There's some new talent in that film, at least talent I'm not familiar with, though.
Is it me?
Unfortunately, it's not.
I really don't care, Michael. Tell me about it. Who's new? Okay.
You know what? I don't know the gentleman's name, but he plays one of the investigative reporters.
Really?
Yeah, and he is, I mean, the kind of the lead investigative reporter that's out there. Do you remember who?
I don't remember his name.
But you know who I'm talking
Absolutely.
About.
Absolutely. Very charismatic.
Very charismatic. The camera loves him. He is a good actor.
That's a serious topic to take on for a first major role kind of thing.
If it is his first major role. I've just not seen him before. So
interesting. I've got to see the film. I've heard a ton about it. Good things.
Yeah. So it was a lovely Thanksgiving. Thanks for asking. And what about you?
Good. It was a crazy Thanksgiving. Of course, you know, we started the show last week as I sat in for Paul, and I had nightmares about this board that's sitting in front of me, all these buttons. It's frightening. But we took the week off, and it was fun. I had a nice time. Took the kids out to Knott's Berry Farm. Has everybody been?
Oh, yeah.
So okay. Fun. So I went. We used to go to Disney, but Disney's decided to drastically raise their prices.
Unbelievable,
so,
right?
We went El Cheapo. And, of course, the show's at Disney. I mean, so many of our performers worked there in their early years to kind of get their footing. And you find that, you know, that those shows are top-notch. You don't let down on those shows. And then you go to Knott's, and you kind of expect, because everything around Knott's is kind of a different feeling than Disney. That magic may be lacking a little bit. But we went into Snoopy on Ice. And I will tell you, I was ready to mock the show. It was unbelievable. unbelievable. My kids were enthralled. What a great way to introduce kids to the performing arts. But they're dancers. They're
it's in that
dancers.
Proscenium theater.
It
there.
Is, the yes. Charles M. Schulz right. Theater. As artists, we try to create art wherever we can. And, man, when you see somebody else working as hard as these guys worked, I was blown away. These people in the show were truly top-notch, and some of them of age, second careers, I would assume, kind of thing.
So it was the same kind of quality as Disneyland, but just half the bucks?
Surprisingly, yeah, especially for the show. Some of the other parts were a little bit sketchy. There were times, like at Disneyland, if you lose your kid, you know somebody's going to find them and bring them over. At Knott's, I kept a little closer hand on them. It looked like there was a lot of gaps in the fences there. And my wife gets really upset if I don't come home with both children I left with. So.
Can't imagine why.
Do you know that as a child, I was my family was a guest of the Knott's family, and Mr. and Mrs. Knott, when they were still alive, we actually all had dinner together.
Wow.
At Knott's Berry Farm.
Wow. So when was Knott's, do you know when it was established as a park?
You know, I honestly don't. I barely remember this, what I'm saying now, but my mother and father were very, you know, giving us all this information about them and to be in our, you know,
sensory overload for kids. Yeah.
was it that famous chicken restaurant that's
yes.
still there?
Yes, supposed to be very, very good. We walked by but didn't eat there, yeah.
And they sent us home with, you know, jars of jam and
really?
All that stuff, yeah.
That's amazing. What a great experience to have as a kid, because it's a hopping place right now. It was very popular and tons of people there the day after Thanksgiving.
Well, during the fall months earlier, it's called Knott's Scary Farm.
Of course.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I guess they do a snow time thing as well that's coming up where they're getting ready to decorate it for all December. It wasn't quite done yet when we were there, but it's supposed to be very exciting. It was a fun place. We had a really great time. Great show, and I was really impressed. It was a reminder of how important it is to wherever you are as an artist, you know, do your best work, because you never know who's walking in to see it. So that was cool to feel and kind of have refreshed. Thank you for asking, Michael.
Have the rain curtain?
They didn't, although it was fascinating. You know, this was Snoopy on Ice, so the characters, Snoopy skated, but the other ones just walked on the side. But they had Olympic-quality skaters, the proscenium was beautiful, and the setup was gorgeous, and it was really fun.
Yeah.
Had a really good time.
I've seen many a show there. Actually, one of my clients produces those shows. I don't know if he's doing this one, but it's an interesting concept to see it on a proscenium stage and have them still have the ability to do some of the tricks that they do on the big ice. They still can execute in the small space.
And it's a tight space. You're right. You're absolutely right. Yeah, thank you for asking. I had a good Thanksgiving. I appreciate it, Michael.
Well, we should get down to business here.
Let's do some work.
Our first guest, ladies and gentlemen, is not only a Los Angeles Stage Alliance Ovation Award winner for his performance in the play Barbarians, but an Outer Critics Circle Awards winner for his roles in A Streetcar Named Desire and Picnic. Other stage credits include Post Office at the Kirk Douglas Theater in Los Angeles and national tours of Cotton Patch. Is it Cotton Patch Gospel?
Cotton Patch Gospel.
Yeah, okay, very good. Cotton Patch Gospel, According to Coyote, and The Rainmaker. Audiences will know him from guest star turns on such episodic television as Invasion, Melrose Place, Breaking Through, and All My Children. He's here today to talk about his co-starring role as Jack in the Jane Martin play, Jack and Jill, starring opposite the gorgeous Tana Frederick, and directed by the very distinguished stage and screen director Jack Heller, opening December 11th at the Santa Monica Playhouse. Please welcome the multi-talented Robert Standley. Welcome back.
I just hate applause.
Our studio audience, truly,
they're a rough crowd. Rough crowd. Oh, hey.
How are you, Robert?
I'm feeling great, buddy. Thank you.
Last time I saw you, you were Guy Masterson in Guys and Dolls.
Yeah.
In Glendale at this beautiful theater in the round.
Thank you for remembering that,
Singing your heart out. Acting your heart out.
Pure romance.
It was a good show. It was
thank
a nice
you, buddy.
Show. Yeah,
it was an incredible cast all around the boards. You know, I was very honored to be in that thing. Everyone matched.
Your co-star, Heather.
Heather Lundstedt.
Yes, who just wrote me a note yesterday. Huh. And we're getting it together. I think she's going to headline my supper club.
She is one of those voices that I say when she sings her top notes, this gorgeous lyric soprano, her top notes, it's like diamonds start spilling out of her mouth. Honestly, it's one of the best sopranos I've ever heard.
Wow.
I've been opposite of a lot of sopranos.
And keep in mind, you've never heard me.
Oh, okay. So, fair enough.
Good thing's coming, my friend.
After the interview, we'll talk.
May not be diamonds. Sing. Probably something else.
So you're out there keeping yourself busy. You're working with somebody who you work with often, Tana. Mm. You've done a few shows with her.
She's one of my favorites. In fact, it's the same team. She and I were Lizzie and Starbuck in Rainmaker in a very successful show that ran for like about a solid year out in Santa Monica, directed by Jack Heller, the very same director who's directing
this. At the Edgemont, right?
Absolutely.
That's great.
So the idea was to put the team of three together again and see what we can come up with this. And this is it's a two-hander. It's a very modern romance, but it also has a lot of comedy and drama. What I like to say, it's kind of like these two are like walking wounded from the relationship wars of modern wars. It's almost like a war, and it's basically their struggle to find out what they really truly need in themselves and the other person, as opposed to what they think they want. Mm-hmm. All the indoctrination. She's a little hardcore with feminism. She's taken it like an idealism to where it's like hardcore. And my guy is this, you know, no conflict at all, a nice guy. And she lays into him constantly. You're too nice. You're too nice. A lot of I hear some truths said in this piece that I've never heard on a stage before,
really?
Which is what attracted me. Yeah.
Well, that's interesting.
Almost
about your character and hers,
both.
Or
yeah, both. Her whole thing about you hold everything in. Show me your, tell me your feelings. And he was so wounded by his former relationship and divorce that he's too afraid to risk, and she's too afraid to let go of the doctrine of modern feminism of I don't need anybody, I got to be independent. It really is some profound stuff, and it's almost educational. I learn every day we rehearse. I love this piece.
Well, that's nice. And you know, you guys must have some sort of a following, the two of you, I suspect, for the fact that you do shows out in Santa Monica.
Well, let me tell you this, it goes beyond stage. She and I are both we're co-producing the very first of its kind, a 3D virtual reality series.
Really?
Yeah, we got like Harry Hamlin in it, and Bruce Davison, and Carl Weathers, the original Apollo Creed, Veronica Cartwright. And we're in the process of shooting it right now as we speak. And it's the whole technology of where movies are heading with the Oculus Rifts that you put on your head. Right now, gamers and, ironically, porn. Those are the only two mediums right now that do the virtual reality where you feel like you're actually in the scene with them.
Wow.
And you put these things
How would you know that about
Right,
porn?
I was going to...
Drew told me earlier out in the lobby.
Hold on, Renshaw's coming
Captain
here.
Captain he
is. Oh, yes. Rough crowd again. Hey. try the veal. But anyway, so we got that, and we also have a movie that we're both in called Ovation. It's going to hit the theaters, you know, nationwide in March.
Now, what's the title of the reality of the virtual reality series?
It's called Defrost.
Defrost.
It's kind of a creepy sci-fi thing.
Cool.
So that's on the web?
Yes.
So if we Google Defrost, will that come up?
Uh-huh. And the pilot just got accepted into Sundance. So we're climbing.
Sounds like it.
Fantastic. Yeah. And that's where Tana is right now.
Tana
on
just
a plane going to Sundance.
As we speak.
Oh, Santa Fe.
No, she's going to Santa Fe for the film festival for Ovation that Henry Jaglom directed, and she's starring in. Right.
Awesome.
Cool project.
Very nice. Yeah. Well, so you always are working, though. Everything.
It seems to be.
Yeah.
I'm not going to cry or complain about that.
Well, not in this town.
Now, down at Santa Monica Playhouse, you're in the main stage there.
I
love that space. That's an interesting space to work in. You're right on top of the audience.
Beautifully intimate, which is perfect for that. We have one bathing suit scene on a beach. Okay. Everyone's going to know every crevice. All right.
That could have been on a nude beach. You're doing all right. So,
just as long as it's not 3D virtual reality. You'll see my flaws.
You could combine the two and maybe make some real money on this.
So. Oh,
that's great. Well,
ideas are popping.
Let me ask you something I always find fascinating. Being the actor that you are, and you're so, you know, versatile in what you do, do you have a preference? What is your stage versus television versus film? You know, three different mediums. A stage is, you know, in the moment, it's live, you'll never have that beat again, you know, you might have something similar, but it's not exactly. But in TV and film, those kinds of things can be corrected and nurtured. Do you have a preference of where you like to work?
It's between theater and film, and I'll tell you why. You kind of touched on it. When you're doing theater and you're really relaxed, you know how you get when you relax so much your kind of hair stands on the back of your neck and you hear, smell, see, touch everything 100% when you're really present. If you really get to that state where you're comfortable enough on stage, you feel the audience and you can feel them, whether they're empathizing, whether they don't like you as an actor, etc. And I'm telling you, it's the biggest high you can get. And you hear actors say this all the time. It's so immediate. It's so visceral, you know. And it's almost like you're doing a dance with the audience.
Right.
You feed each other. Film. The minute that camera's going and you hear roll, speed, right then that click and then action starts, man, I turn into this thing where it's all internal as opposed to explosive like you are on stage reaching out to the audience. I turn internal and I let the audience come and find me. And not always revealing the eyes or the thoughts, but it's palpable. The person who I saw do this better than anyone so far ever on camera is especially a young Marlon Brando. If you watch his early stuff, you just go, how do you do that? You don't know it until you see it. It's like supernatural. And you go, I know he's human. I know he breathes and pees. But there's something about accessing that magic. I call it a magic in the air. And you know it on screen. Meryl Streep has it too. Mm-hmm.
Don't you think that might be that's how they are also in person?
I agree.
In their real lives? And they don't really think twice about it?
I'll tell you this. I'm generally a very effervescent, explosive guy in life. Uh-huh. I love to live like that. But the minute I get to work and the camera's on, I turn completely opposite.
Right.
I go internal.
Right.
Robert Duvall, you're right, he does that. In life, he's very internal. You know, come find me. But I'm able to go back and forth, and it makes me feel alive.
Yeah, and Meryl Streep seems to be, as versatile as she is, she seems to be in real life, at least my opinion is, that there's somewhat of a shyness to her.
Yeah. Know?
Well, you know, she's not in your face or in anybody's face.
You know, it's fascinating.
Whether she's at the Academy Awards or
very much. I think you'll find good acting is a combination of great casting, putting the right person in the place to succeed, as well as somebody who can nail the performance. If you're put in a position, you know, Brando was as great as he was. Mm-hmm. When he went to go play Sky, you know, obviously that was a very different animal for him. So I think you'll find that you can be successful a lot of different ways, but good teamwork is always going to be one of the things that brings you back, which I'm sure you're finding with Jack and Jill working with the same people and over again. You get a leg up.
It's a lived-in comfort level. It's one of those things you're so damn lucky to have that. You know?
Right. You start rehearsals with something under your belt already. You have a relationship built and you know where to go from.
And isn't Jack and Jill based on the relationship that Jane Martin, the writer, had?
Very good. Yes. So, yeah. Yes, absolutely. You've done your research, my man.
Yeah, we do. We don't mess around here.
Bada bing, bada boom.
We do things right here at State of the Arts. There's no doubt about it.
You know what you're going to learn here.
It makes you wonder. Her other thing that she's famous for is a play called Keely and Do, which is probably one of the most intense pieces I think I've ever read. And it makes you wonder. If it's all autobiographical, it's like, poor lady, holy smokes.
Is she still here with us?
Yeah.
Will she be seeing this production?
I hope so. We're certainly putting out the feelers. And by the way, I want to say this to you. Mm-hmm. Tana told me to extend this to you. You're also a reviewer. She wants you to come our opening weekend if you'd like.
I'd love that.
Which, by the way, we've adjusted it. It's not December 11th now. We are opening January 1st, right on New Year's Day.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Also, they have a big bash every New Year's Eve, and they want to invite you to their big party at Henry Jaglom's mansion.
Oh, well.
What do you think of that?
Well, you know, I've known about Henry for many years because he used to be involved with a very helpful friend of mine, Andrea Markovici, who is a rather classic cabaret singer and still quite a beautiful woman.
They were a couple for a long time. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But she got some wonderful films out of Mr. Jaglom.
Wow.
I shouldn't say it that way. He chose her.
You already have, Michael. That's there, brother. Now, you said this is based off of Jane's relationship. Do you find that, and it was written specifically by her, correct? She was the only author?
Yes.
Did you find that dealing with the male perspective in that show was at all challenging, given coming from a female perspective as a writer?
Well, now that you're digging, I'm going to tell you what the Jane Martin syndrome is. In Louisville, Kentucky, at the Actors Theater Louisville, there's a man.
One of the best theaters in the country. I love the Actors Theater Louisville.
John Jory is the king. He's Victor Jory's son. Everyone says this. The theory is that Jane Martin is really John Jory. And what he does is, when he writes Jane Martin plays, it's ones that spotlight more on the feminine perspective. So no one knows 100% sure, but everyone is almost 95% sure that Jane Martin is actually John Jory.
Wow.
I wasn't going to say it.
Well, she's famous, as it says in the news release, famous pseudonymous.
There you go.
Interesting. Yeah.
That's no one really knows, but it's the talk of every play by theirs because when he does the female like Keely and Dew and Jack and Jill, it's such a feminine slant, and it's really, really an interesting take. I love this piece very much.
That's great.
That is interesting.
That's kind of cool, actually, too. If that is indeed the case.
Yeah. If nothing else, great speculation for fodder around the fire to talk about here, right? So we can kind of get some good theater stuff going.
Absolutely.
Actors Theater Louisville has some of the best work going right now. Their one-act festival, their short play festival. I'm from Lexington, so a number of the plays that we saw there, it's really where I fell in love with theater and what, you know, gave us a chance to kind of say, hey, this can be great work in the middle of Kentucky. Just think what you can do on the coast with all the other resources and that sort of thing.
I love that part of the country.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful place
to raise a family. Are you from Kentucky?
Texas.
Oh, Texas.
Why'd you hear it in my accent?
Yes, I did.
What the? All right. I've been trying to get rid of this for, I don't
know,
shouldn't. 80 years.
It's who you are. It's part of you. Right? Yeah, where in Texas?
Dallas. I actually grew up on a...
Small town.
Yeah, small town. We lived on the outskirts a lot. I grew up in a small town where we lived on a farm, and I actually rode in rodeos. And I used to, like, rope calves and stuff. And then I got pulled off and broke my collarbone. I said, not good, because I know I want to be an actor. So I went into barrel racing, which is, if you think about it, it's generally women do it because your center of balance is in their hips. And they can stay on the horse when you're going around the tight curves. But a guy, we're top heavy.
Right.
I tumbled off of the horse many times on that, too. Man. So here I am as an actor. No more rodeo.
I tell you, I broke.
You might get a role as a rodeo guy.
There you go.
I would take it. I would
there
take
you
it.
Go. Something so you're know. Set for that, right?
You said versatile.
Whoever's listening.
I've broken two collarbones doing fight choreography for theater and film. So I don't know that you're any safer here, but
well, isn't that painful though, man?
I've actually broken each one three times.
Honestly, do they mend by themselves?
They do. It takes about 6 to 8 weeks. But I broke my first one when I was 3 years old, tumbling off a high chair, and then I did it successfully about every 3 years after that.
That tumble was not intentional.
No, I was trying to reach a magnet to impress a young lady.
At three.
Isn't that always the story?
If you don't get them early, then you don't stand a chance with these girls. You got to really impress these ladies. So. But it was interesting because at 3 years old, you know, I mean, you don't understand the pain, and I couldn't explain it because that's such a strange injury. And you don't raise your arms up, you know. So it was somebody else who had to notice my three-year-old body was hurting. And then after that, I realized the pain was, you know, there. And it was something that, you know, as a fight choreographer, you realize, boy, you use your collarbones for everything, very much like knees. They're involved in everything you do.
Right.
So, yeah, that's
ribs
a painful
too.
Injury.
You ever cracked a rib?
Taking a deep breath is very painful.
All you can do is get it bandaged up and wait for it to heal.
Really?
There's nothing you can do about it. Just wait. Months.
Wow. But I'd say you're safer in theater and the arts than you were in radio, that's for sure. So.
Let's talk about how people can see this wonderful play, Jack and Jill. And Robert has just advised us that they're not opening on December 11th.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You are opening on January...
New Year's Day.
New
January
Year's
1st.
Day. And
great
you are
way to
running
celebrate.
Through February 28th?
Right now it's an open-ended run. And the address at the Santa Monica Playhouse is 1211 4th Street in Santa Monica. And the ticket prices are Friday, Saturday, $25, Sunday, $20, previews, $15.
And where can you go to get live entertainment for that type of, you know, money, right?
And Santa Monica
theater.
Playhouse.
We have
is
so
a
much
great, place.
Great theater where you can spend that and have a wonderful evening. And in Santa Monica, of course, go to one of their great restaurants out there before you go to the theater.
One block from 3rd Street Promenade.
There
everything you,
go. You
need.
That's
you know, we talk a lot
there.
About NoHo Arts District and how amazing that is. Santa Monica is another great place, especially the Playhouse down there. A really great place to see a show and then walk someplace to eat.
And the estimated running time of the show is 90 minutes plus the intermission. Mm-hmm. Online ticketing is available at plays411.com, and reservations for tickets can be had by calling 323-960-1055.
Ladies and gentlemen, Robert Stanley, thank you very much, sir.
Thank you very much.
You got it. So we have a live arts calendar.
We certainly do.
You're going to take care of that for us, Andrew?
You know, I'd love to. I tell you, I love the live arts calendar. It's an amazing resource for everybody in theater, who loves theater in L.A. And today we are representing the El Portal Theater, proudly presents Cash on Delivery, directed by Ray Cooney, written by Michael Cooney, December 3rd through December 20th on the main stage at the historic El Portal Theater in the NoHo Arts District of North Hollywood. Cash on Delivery reunites the family talents of actor, director, or father Ray Cooney and his stage screenwriting son Michael Cooney in this hilarious British farcical romp. Ray Cooney leads an international cast from Broadway and London's West End theaters and is today not only recognized theatrically and publicly as the master of farce, a title I've desperately wanted to hold all of my life, but he's also been recognized by the Queen of England, who bestowed upon him an honor of OBE Commander. What does that stand for, Michael?
Order of the British Empire.
So Commander of the British Empire, another title I'm dying to have on my business card, for his contributions to British theater. Cash on Delivery opens in previews this evening, December 3rd, with its official opening on Sunday, December 6th, at the beautiful El Portal Theater in trendy NoHo Arts District of North Hollywood, one of our favorites. For tickets and guaranteed laughs aplenty, call 818-408-4200 or 866-811-4111, or my favorite, go online and order at www.elportaltheater.com. That's theaterre.com.
Indeed, and we've got some great things opening on a larger level for Amundsen Theater Downtown Center Theater Group, the Bridges of Madison County, is starting the U.S. National Tour at the Amundsen, and they open on the 10th, a mm-hmm. week from today. And I'm excited. I'm going to the opening. So
have they done previews yet? Do you know? Have you seen any previews there?
They're doing their previews in Iowa.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah,
wow.
So they're coming out here, and they'll go right into it.
Exciting.
Yeah,
exciting.
So I'm going to do the red carpet there for Broadway World TV. And then the following, the evening before, is the opening of If Then at the Pantages Theater. With
another great work.
Adina Menzel.
Yes.
Yeah. Or Adele Dazeem.
Did you see there was an app to Adele Zaim, your name? That somebody did an app where whatever your name is, you plug it in, it says how he would have said it that night. So.
Do you remember right after he'd said it, the Broadway marquee, they changed it to Adele Dazeem in?
Yes.
The Broadway marquee in New York. Poor John.
We are going to have LaChance and one of the other stars of the show with us on State of the Arts.
That would be wonderful.
On the 7th.
Really
next
great.
Week, actually. Yeah.
Good, good.
Yeah.
I tell you, we're getting up in the world here at State of the Arts, aren't we, Michael?
Yeah.
We've seen talent come in these studios these last few weeks. So.
That's what we're here for, right? I mean, there's so little. You know, when I created this show and then asked Paul to do it with me.
I'm sorry, who?
Paul. I've Paul Strolley? Remember
him? No, I don't recall. Never heard. Tall, good-looking guy?
Yeah.
I don't know him.
Size 14 foot? Yeah.
Careful, you're going to put that right up my backside if we're not careful.
No, he... it was because there was such a poor showing of radio support in not only Los Angeles, but all across the country for the arts. And I never wanted this to be anything like public radio. You know, where you're serious sure. and everything's kind of down here, and it's kind of tedious to listen to. So, our approach, of course, is to be a little irreverent and yet still be serious about what we're doing and supporting things such as what's going on at the NoHo Arts area there and the El Portal Theater and what's going on downtown, what's going on in Santa Monica. You know, it's important. I mean, people need to not only get themselves to the arts and away from those TVs, but they also need to get their children to the theater.
Here, here. You know, you've been such a great supporter of the arts in L.A., and I know Paul comes with a great appreciation of that coming from Chicago, which is another great theater town. So it's nice to have those points of view really pushing forward the arts here in L.A.
Why don't you give our next guest their very due introduction instead of me? You want to do that?
I absolutely can. In fact, Scott, can you tell us a little bit about yourself? Do you mind?
Sure.
I'd love to hear a little bit about you.
Sure, not at all. I live in Los Angeles. I feel very, very proud of that. But I actually grew up in Carlsbad, California. But I've been living here in
Los Angeles. What's it like growing up in Carlsbad, California?
It's such a beach community.
Yeah.
I'm glad that I actually I went to college at the American Academy of Dramatic Arts here in L.A. So that gave me my preparedness in my life, but there's something great about growing up in a beach community. It also gives you that wonderful, I'm going to sound a little kumbaya here, and I really am only a teeny bit kumbaya, but it makes you be more in the moment of the moment, if that makes sense, because you've got the beach, you've got that sort of kickback.
Kind of a dude.
Yeah, you definitely, definitely. But a beautiful place to grow up. And,
all right.
And I go back.
Now we're going to give you the right
introduction
that you deserve.
And now you've been touring for the last few years as well with your much lauded one-man musical show, Doris and Me. Is that correct?
Yeah.
The Doris Day Songbook, a beautiful, amazing songbook. I tell you, I've got a story I want to tell you about in a minute because Doris Day is one of my favorites.
I love that.
Yeah. A musical theater veteran for 20 years, Doris and Me is a press... As press notes described, a one-man's quirky, lovable obsession with music and movie icon Doris Day. His successful career also includes appearances in over 50 theatrical productions and has been embraced by TV, film, commercials, animation, voiceovers, and the best-selling self-titled CD called...
Scott Dreyer.
What a coincidence. How can that... What? This is uncanny. His enthusiasm for life, his gentle being, his abundance of talent. Why does nobody write intros like this for me? This is... and true, too. Frightening. Aww. And his innate showmanship is nothing short of inspirational. He's here today to talk about a very special release and destination of a fast track on his new
first
album.
Track.
I'm sorry, first track on his new album, The Doris Day Project. Please welcome Scott Dreyer, ladies and gentlemen.
Woo!
Holding for applause. Holding. Everyone hold for applause.
There you go. They were in the bathroom.
That's right. Well, more than anything, they were stunned in silence by his impressive intro. And I got to tell you, truly, from the moment I met you, your kindness, your openness, I appreciate that very much. It's funny. You know, we work in this industry and you meet new people every day and you walk in and you never know what to expect. The moment I met both of you gentlemen, it was nice to see such a good, positive, open attitude. I appreciate that. Does that come through on stage, Scott?
I hope so. You know, I think we part of our personalities always show through on in whatever project
it's
we're doing.
Very true.
The thing I love about getting the opportunity to do Doris and Me is you never get a chance to be able to create your own show. I feel very, very fortunate that I was doing a show at the Welk Theater in San Diego.
Wow,
I'd
beautiful
have this,
space.
Beautiful. I'd had this idea to that I'd been wanting to create a show about Doris Day. Quick little catch up. As a kid, I wasn't allowed to watch TV or movies or listen to music until I became a little older.
Sure.
And so my pop culture is very specific. Most people remember all the things they watch, but for me, I was only able to watch the Saturday Afternoon Film Festival hosted by the great Tom Hatton. If anybody remembers,
of course, absolutely.
I was on Popeye when I was a kid on his show.
Are you kidding?
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah. And the Doris Day show. Are you kidding?
And I won.
You
won. I won a trampoline. I got the unscrambled the squiggle thing. You know?
How right. cool! Yeah. And you won a trampoline
yeah.
from that. Wow.
I did.
Wow.
Well, he showed a lot of Doris Day movies, and that's sort of how my love of her began, and I sort of she is why I decided to become an actor. You know, discovering her, whether watching her play Calamity Jane or do drama
sure.
in movies like Love Me or Leave Me or The Man Who Knew Too Much, and then seeing her. In my mind, she is watching any of her comedies is like a masterclass, especially The Thrill of It All and Pillow Talk, and so to be able to create a show to celebrate her and to thank her. For the importance that she's had in my life has been humbling beyond belief. And then to have Doris Day even know who Scott Dreyer is...
Tell us about that, because that happened in person just a couple of years ago, didn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I talk about in my show, you know, the end of my show was meeting her 20 years ago and sort of having that moment that we all want to be able to tell somebody the importance they have in our lives. And I was a little too young to really be able to put it into words and to articulate it. And I have been waiting for 20 years for a redo and a do-over, and I got that. And boy, did I know what to say. And
the occasion was?
It was her 90th birthday. Mm-hmm. They were doing a big celebration for her up in Carmel, and she was not expected to attend and surprised everyone.
Wow.
3 o'clock that afternoon. Deciding that, you know, hey, maybe I'll come to this.
Mm-hmm.
And I talk about this in my show, but just that moment when, you know, she didn't want any fanfare, just typical, exactly what you'd expect of Doris Day. She didn't want a big introduction. She just simply walked into the room and then just the discovery of everyone that she was there. It was just this eruption of love and applause and just... was one of the most, I'll never forget that moment as long as I live.
Well, I noticed also on her website for her foundation, which she's so involved in animals, as we know, and she always has been, you're very present on that website in pictures and so forth.
It's
which
insane.
It must be kind of odd for you now to look, you know, by the story that you're telling, think back and now look at what's happened here.
Yeah,
on her website now.
It's surreal. It is never not surreal. She leaves updated voice greetings to her fans. And the very first time she mentioned my name, the truth is, I kept saying, gosh, it sounds like she just said Scott Dreyer, but that can't possibly be. You know, and then you re-listen and you think, how is this happening? I mean, I wrote a show because I'm so inspired by the work that she has done as an artist and even more inspired by the work she does for animals today.
Yeah.
That it's amazing. I mean, each step has... You were at the opening night in L.A., but when we did the opening night for the Doris Day Animal Foundation, her foundation, and one that I'm very passionately in favor of and involved with today, I thought, gosh, we have a lot of Doris Day fans coming into town. Wouldn't it be fun if I tried to create a red carpet of her co-stars. And so that night we had 6 of her co-stars in attendance.
Terrific. Such as?
We have Jackie Joseph from the Doris Day Show introduced me that night. It was just so lovely. Kim Carrath, of course, most people remember her as Gretel from The Sound of Music.
Sounds funny, of course.
But she played Doris's daughter in The Thrill of It All.
That's right.
And when I found my way to her, she said, you know, Brian Nash, who played my brother in that, we haven't seen each other since we were in our early 20s.
Wow.
And then, of course, I went, oh, I've got to find Brian. And so I found him, and that was the first time seeing each other was on the red carpet of my show, which was lovely. And Teddy Quinn from The Ballad of Josie, one of the most exciting ones that night, Christopher Olsen, who I made the discovery is Susan Olsen's older brother, but he plays Doris's kidnapped son in The Man Who Knew Too Much.
Wow.
And he made his first appearance business-wise in decades that night, and singing Que Sera Sera, which of course is from that film. With the man in the room who sang it with her the very first time was humbling.
You know, beautiful. The love and admiration that you speak about her with, and not only here, but even in snippets that I've seen posted online, and just your advocacy of not only her, but her animal rights work, comes through. And it's very reminiscent to me of somebody who I worked with, John Raitt, who, of course, speaks glowingly of Doris and some of their time together. And not only that, but particularly her talent. He said that, and that man, John Raitt, knows a good voice. And I knew him at the end of his life, and he was 85 or 86 at the time. And he was, quite frankly, a doddering old man. He was stooped and hunched-shouldered and had a lot of, you know, physical problems that he was dealing with. But when he sang The Impossible Dream, it was as if he was 20 years old standing on stage. And he knew a great voice. And he always said that Doris had a truly amazing voice, which I thought is fascinating.
Well, I think that it's been said of her that from the standpoint of sound engineering of music, that she has the most perfect voice, electronically speaking, for that reason.
Yeah.
You know, that she is so crystal clear and it's so on pitch and just, I guess, a dream for any sound engineer to be working with her.
Yeah. And then the emotion that she has, like you can hear a smile in her voice. You can hear heartbreak. You can, it really is extraordinary. She really didn't get enough due as a singer or as an actress, in my opinion.
Did she and John Raitt do anything other than Pajama Game together?
No, that was the only time. And for her, that's an extraordinary film just because she joined an entire Broadway cast who'd been doing it on stage.
And stepped in with no trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's fascinating, too. I think you find anybody who's met her speaks about her in such glowing terms. I think that's an ultimate credit to who somebody truly is when anybody who's met you sees what's coming off of you in that glow and that amazingness.
So. And that's how she is in person.
Really?
You are the only person in the room in her when you're with her, and that's lovely.
That's great.
And that's how she was with me when I worked with her, too. She was very one-on-one in that situation. I was very, you know, I certainly knew who she was because I was, a teenager at that point. But the very idea of doing this show, when the agent called, I didn't have to audition for it. My agent called and said, do you want to do this? They would like you to do it, and it's just a small part. And I said, would I? Because my dad was like, she was in, you know, her picture all over the garage and those kinds of things, as I'm sure every man in America was doing. But so very gracious, made me feel totally at ease. And, who wouldn't be affected by meeting someone of that stature that young, right?
Of course. Yeah. But for her to take that time just shows why she's so beloved.
Exactly. Now, so I read somewhere where she lives in this beautiful home in Carmel, and she is preparing for it to become a sanctuary for the animals when she passes. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I've heard that too. I don't know specifics to that, but I've always heard that was going to be the plan of it. But I don't know. I can't verify that.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That she would even think of that, actually.
Yeah. Well, it's
just fascinating. Instead of building another facility, that she would want them in her own home like that.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
And that's what she cares the most about.
Well, tell us about your project, the Doris Day project, and the album, and what can people expect. And we're going to play a little bit of this track, Andrew, to give people an idea of how Scott's rendition of this very famous Doris Day song, Everybody Loves Somebody.
Scott, would you mind? Everybody Loves a Lover.
Everybody Loves a Lover. Dean Martin.
Would you mind if I played a little bit of that now?
Sure, let's
do it. Who is this gentleman singing on this?
It's the lovely, sensational,
Jane
magnificent,
sorry, intro Jane, back out again.
Grammy-nominated jazz artist. She is actually...
and hot.
Oh.
So sexy.
Can I tell you, she is my favorite female artist recording today. And to get to sing with her... Holy
smokes. And how did that come about? Jane Monheit.
Her first album was amazing.
Yeah,
amazing.
She's an extraordinary performer, an extraordinary human being. So the truth of it is, we live in a good time with social media.
Yeah.
I always knew I wanted to record a duet. I always knew that I wanted that to be the first single. I wanted the proceeds, all of the proceeds from that song, to go to the Doris Day Animal Foundation. Of course, I can't think of a better way to celebrate Doris Day. And so the truth of it is, I did a Facebook post, and I knew I could get to Jane Monheit through a couple different avenues, but I thought, you know what? There's got to be this 6 degrees of separation. So 1 degree of separation later, I get a message from somebody. Oh, I know Jane very well.
Wow.
We contacted her. Immediately she said, I love Doris Day. I love animals. We sent her sort of a rough track of what we were planning. The instruments hadn't been recorded yet. And within 24 hours, she said, I'm in. And I planned my whole album recording. This true story, we moved up the entire date of recording my album for Jane, because I wanted to get her the tracks so that she would be able to have it for a few days. She was coming into town to perform in Los Angeles for one day.
Wow.
She graciously agreed to come in for two and spend an hour in the studio with me, and an hour I will never forget.
That's you fantastic. Cut that track in an hour?
Yeah.
Wow.
And now this is a pre-release, is that correct?
Pre-release,
this has not been openly released yet. And where can people go to get it?
Let me tell you that. It is the single has been released only on the Doris Day Animal Foundation website and can be purchased for a minimal donation of $5, minimal. All proceeds, including the royalties, which as well have very generously been donated, will be going to the Doris Day Animal Foundation to help with animal welfare. And at 92 years young, animals have always been Miss Day's passion, and she is very proactive in her work for her foundation.
Excellent. And here
and
we are.
And the website for that, ladies and gentlemen, is DorisDayAnimalFoundation.org.
Ladies and gentlemen, everybody loves a lover.
Once again, Scott Dreyer from the Doris Day Project, his latest album that he's working on. Now, is the album completed or it's almost completed?
It's almost completed. We haven't done the artwork yet, but it's been recorded, it's mixed, it's
fantastic.
Mastered. So we're ready to go. I had initially wanted to release it at Christmas, and then everybody said it'll get lost in Christmas music. So I think the plan
Smart.
Will be early February.
Yeah. Valentine's Day sounds like a lot of fun for that.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And that was, of course, Jane Monheit singing with Scott on that. Are there any other duets on the album?
No, I just wanted there to be the one that was sort of, I wanted it to make it really, really special. And as you can tell with this version, I wanted to find my own way with the songs. I wanted to revisit them from 2015.
Well, I love the treatment you gave this, that kind of real honky-tonk kind of the feeling about it is wonderful, right?
Absolutely.
That was
Absolutely.
My idea.
It makes you also, for anybody that's familiar with it, it makes you really listen to it again, like you're hearing it for the first time. And then for somebody who hasn't ever heard it, because it is cool and hip, right? It's a win. It's a win-win situation, right?
Absolutely.
Thank you. Yeah, I always wanted New Orleans, I thought, but I wanted it to feel. I wanted you to feel the things you feel about Doris's version, which are happy and joyous,
right,
and sexy and
right,
easy and all those things.
And yet, it's also very much its own. I mean, it's got that definite jazz feel and a lot of really cool undertones. You really made it your own. It's a beautiful piece.
Thank you.
Listening to it.
Well, we have 5 minutes left, and of course, this is that time in the program, Drew, as you know, that would, and you boys remember this because you each did it, but you're going to be doing it again when we kind of baptize you and ask you to call upon one of your more awkward or embarrassing moments during your careers. It can be whether it be on stage or in a film or a television show, but something that is a standout. It can be funny. It can be serious. It can be anything you want it to be. So Scott looks like he might have something ready.
Sure. I'll bring it. I have...
Scott, did it happen today? Is it on this show?
It happened on this show. Well, because we've been on the Doris Day land, I'll tell you a Doris and me story. I was doing, there's a particular moment in the show I talk about my relationship with my grandmother, and I talk about sending, my grandmother had passed away, and I at this particular poignant moment in the show where I'm talking about the song My Buddy, which was sort of a big song to my grandmother. It meant a lot to her. And I'm later talk about writing to Doris Day about the loss of my grandmother. So it's this moment in the show that's very, very quiet. And for some reason, there was someone in the audience that couldn't hear. I said, and then my grandmother passed away. Hmm. And the woman in the front row says, of course, you know, forgetting that there is, you know, there that I can hear her and she can hear me. She says, "What happened? I can't hear him. He needs to talk louder." And the man next to her said, "His grandmother, she died. And then she said, she looks up at me and she goes, "Young man, just speak a little louder because we can't hear you." And of course, completely out of the moment, but and embarrassed, you know, then you're like in the moment of that moment and having that recovery. Fortunately, with the show, because I wrote it, I know it like the back of my hand. And so I was able to, you know, I said, you know, walked and made a moment with that woman. And later on, I even gave her a hug during the show. So, but it was at the time a mortifying moment because you're sort of in the middle of this incredible emotional time. And then you're being reprimanded for not
but
using
at the same
your
time,
stage voice.
How great that they were in the moment enough to be reacting so honestly. That's a cool thing, too.
Well, as he would be. I would suspect that.
That's great.
If I didn't know him, I would still suspect that. Robert.
Oh, mine's more typical. It has to do with that exposure thing that you dream about when you're a kid. You're standing out there, and all of a sudden, you're stark naked. I'm doing the national tour of Rainmaker, ironically enough, and I'm playing Starbuck. And in the love scene in the tack room, the director really wanted to be steamy, so my shirt was off. And, you know, top couple buttons were unbuttoned on my pants. But the thing is, I kept losing weight on the tour. So there's this scene where I'm crawling over to Lizzie and I'm reaching over to let her hair down, and all of a sudden all I hear, I don't feel anything, all I hear is from the audience, "Ooh, child, you're gonna lose your drawers." And something, I'm trying to stay in character and I'm thinking, and I glance down just in time to see them start to go, and they literally are falling down past, and I wasn't wearing underwear, and it was very exposing. And
we were going commando, huh?
Well, I was, but, you know, because of, you know, method, you know. But I was fully exposed, and when it happened, she goes, I done told you. So, that was very embarrassing.
Oh, my goodness. It'd be more embarrassing if we didn't do this entire show without pants.
We are pantsless.
Truly my favorite part of radio. You can work without pants,
yeah,
and nobody knows.
Nobody but us.
And we do that. Paul and I do that.
Plus, Robert gets extra points for nudity. Any story with nudity right on this show, you get extra points for us.
Good for you.
And it's in your draws.
Part of our rewards program.
That's right. That is truly great.
And once
stories
again, you can see Robert Stanley and his beautiful guest star, Tana Frederick, in Jack and Jill at the Santa Monica Playhouse. It will open on January 1st and play through February 28th. A wonderful evening of theater, I assure you. And for tickets, you simply call 323-960-1055 or visit plays411.com. And for being one of the lucky people that can grab the single of Scott Dreyer and Jane Monheit for the Doris Day Animal Foundation in proceeds for that organization. Simply, and all you, the minimal donation, it's a donation, folks, $5. And you know you've got that in your pocket, if not more. I'd say go for more. And all proceeds, and including the royalties, have been very generously donated to this cause. So all you have to do is go to the Doris Day animalfoundation.org address, and you will see Scott's picture. You will be able to climb into that and make payment and do, give it a download of the recording.
I appreciate it.
You
thank you.
Bet.
Yeah, ddaf.org is easier for people to remember.
Oh,
sometimes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that'll go there,
yeah,
too?
Yeah, ddaf.org.
Right. This is what was on there, so I decided to say it that way. But either way, you have
truly a great cause.
Absolutely. Yeah. Gentlemen, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having us. So well,
we always like seeing you, and you, Scott. Mm. I don't see enough of you. So, and thank you for bringing me a copy of the Doris Day show that I did. That
you
I
have to watch it. Are you kidding?
Yeah. Hey, Michael, let's do this again next week. You available?
Absolutely.
Good.
Drew, I am. And thank you for filling in for Paul once again.
Thank
you made
for
the show your own, so we appreciate that. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll see you on the radio.
Paul, come home. We miss you, brother.
Yes,
be safe.
Indeed. Please.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strohle, right here on LA Talk Radio.